Joining us right now, Douglas Murray. He is the author of this number one best-selling book we've been telling you about, The Strange Death of Europe, Immigration, Identity, and Islam. Welcome to Mornings on the Mall. Pleased to have you.
It's very good to be with you.
You know, you could pretty much say anything you want during this next half hour. It could be the most ridiculous thing ever, but because you say it with a British accent, everyone listening is going to go, wow, that man's brilliant.
I don't think I'll test that.
But, well, it's true. You know that about Americans. You know that. I have friends who are British, and they all know it. They could literally say the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard, and Americans go, wow, he's a genius.
It's tempting, but...
Whereas Americans can say anything, and you think we're all idiots. So we understand that. I got that. I know. So we were talking about what you talk about in the book, about, you know, immigration from North Africa and the Middle East into Europe. You talk about declining birth rates. You talk about this almost a self-hatred, you know, that we're a global society and how all of that is playing into this really rapid rise of terror attacks that we're seeing in Europe. And we're just comparing that to what we see here in the United States. We lag about 15 years or so behind you guys, behind Europe. And I wanted to talk about that aspect of that with you to start off this. We don't disagree with any of those things. Do you see that happening here, or is America somehow immune to that? Are we doing something differently than what they did in Europe?
No, I mean, part of my book, The Strange Death of Europe's point, is to warn Americans of what is obviously happening here. And that's not just about the movement of people. I mean, the phenomenon I describe in the book from firsthand reporting across the continent, from speaking to people in the countries they're leaving, in the places they come into in Europe, and the places they end up in suburbs of Scandinavian cities and so on, all of that, it's a massive movement. I mean, 1.5 million people arrived in Germany in a single year alone. That's 2% of the population added in a single year. So the numbers and the places they're coming from are definitely on a scale that America is not currently experiencing. But you do have a bit of this. And the more important thing, in a way, is that you suffer from all of the same things I think we suffer from in Europe, which are effectively the us problems. Why does this happen to us? You know, there's no meaningful migration from my country to Saudi Arabia or Somalia. There's no meaningful migration from your country to Saudi Arabia. Why are they coming to our countries? Well, it's actually not just because of our economic benefits. It's not just because of the better life that they would like to have. It's because we have, in my view, fallen for a whole set of things that have made this happen. We've fallen for this idea that we are, for instance, we in Europe, but you a bit in America too, we're sort of uniquely guilty, that we deserve this, and also that we're not that special, that we are sort of boring. You hear this in the debate in across Europe, that we're sort of staid societies, that the culture of Dante and Bach and Goethe and Voltaire needs improving. Now, you don't hear this any other way around. Nobody says, you know, the thing about Sudan is it could really do with an infusion of Scots. You know, I'm a Scottish ancestor. I think there are some great things about Scotland, but you don't hear it that way around. Whereas you do hear this view that there's basically something missing at the heart of us that needs to be filled up. I, by the way, don't deny that a certain level of migration is beneficial to a society. And who could deny that you get certain benefits? The point is that the benefits don't increase commensurately with the number of people coming. So the first 10 people from a country might bring an example of their cuisine, but you don't get 10,000 times better cuisine with 10,000 times more people. And these are very, very deep. Some of these are very deep-seated psychological problems that I think our societies are in now. And as I say, I think in Europe, we're far further down the road. But it is effectively a warning sign, in my view, to you in America, of what you shouldn't do here.
Well, talk about those elites. We use the phrase limousine liberals here in the U.S., you know, nowadays they're limousine revolutionaries, and there's been this phrase that is kicked around in certain circles about the red-green alliance.
Yes.
You know, don't they want the wrong people here?
Yes, some of them do. By the way, it's not just the red-green alliance, the so-called watermelons. The former Conservative Prime Minister of Sweden said a few years ago, Sweden doesn't belong to the people who are here. It sort of belongs to the world.
On that note, we're going to get more from you. This is Douglas Murray, who is the author of the best-selling book in the UK, The Strange Death of Europe. And we're going to talk to him a little bit more about this problem. And, gee, what can we do to stop that from manifesting itself here? I'm Mary Walter with Tom Fitton from Judicial Watch here with me. And joining us right now is Douglas Murray. He is the author of the number one best-selling book in the UK, The Strange Death of Europe, Immigration, Identity, and Islam, talking about the rise of terrorism in Europe. And it has been very, very swift. It's been a meteoric rise of terrorism in the UK. Is the genie out of the bottle in Europe? Can the genie be put back in the bottle? Or is this a change now that is now part of each national identity across Europe?
Yeah, that's a very good question. It's the one we're all worrying about at the moment because, of course, in France, we had this massive spate of terror in the last 2 years. Hundreds of people killed in different attacks across the country. And people were massacred in France, from the most secular cartoonists at Charlie Hebdo to a priest saying mass at the altar of his church in Rouen. Some of us in Britain thought it was possible we were going to escape some of that. But nobody thought we were going to escape it entirely. And yes, in 10 weeks alone recently, we had three Islamic terrorist attacks in the UK. And now, by the way, to my mind, an even darker twist to this whole thing, the first time that there's been what looks like a reprisal, revenge attack by a non-Muslim on worshippers coming out of a mosque. And that, I go into a bit of this in my book, that is the kind of nightmare scenario squared, where the public could get so fed up with the perceived lack of action by the elites and by the politicians that they take matters into their own hands. This is really the nightmare scenario.
If you want to get liberals in the American media upset, you talk about no-go zones, allegedly in many major urban centers in Europe, where Islamists are allowed to actually live as Islamists, impose Sharia law, and you don't have the traditional protections for life, liberty, and property you would in other places in the country.
Yeah.
Have you found that to be true in your researching your book and your visits across the Europe?
Yeah, I have. And I mean, this is a subject which is sometimes over-egged, it has to be said. In my country, in Britain, there are not areas where the police can't go. But there are areas, as there are across the continent, in some places really stark examples, where effectively a community has cut itself off. And yes, it is true, and I've visited them myself, there are Sharia courts in the UK that operate. They're meant to operate underneath British law, i.e. they're not meant to do anything that runs counter to British law. But I've spoken to many women in the course of doing this book, among others, who have said that they have never been told their rights as British women. They've only ever been told their rights as Muslim women in Britain. And you see, that is the area. Once you do migration at this level, and obviously people want to live with people like themselves and so on in the first generation, the second generation, obviously that's going to happen. You're going to get ghettos for good or ill. And within those ghettos, government doesn't really have that much of an idea of what goes on. How can government know how a Sharia court is treating a woman who wants a divorce from her husband? They don't.
Isn't it interesting that Donald Trump, the most reviled leader in the West, is the most sophisticated on this issue?
That's a good way of putting it. But I tell you something. This is a very curious thing. When Donald Trump early this year said he wanted to suspend travel for only a matter of weeks between this country, America, and seven, you know, very unstable Muslim majority countries, you know, Sudan, Libya, Syria, and so on, the whole world went bananas. Every single bit of decent, you know, polite opinion, as it were, just went for the US president. You couldn't find anyone in my country to defend him. Interestingly enough, just after that announcement was made by your president, there was a poll released in Europe of the opinions of Europeans with asked a much tougher question. The question was, do you agree with the statement that there should be zero more migration of Muslims into your country? And in reaction to that statement, 8 out of 10 countries in Europe, including France and Germany, the majority of the public said they wanted zero more Muslims. And one of the only two countries where there wasn't a majority opinion was the UK, where only 47% of people wanted it. So what Donald Trump said was mild compared to what the European publics actually want. Of course, the problem is that nobody in any political position in Europe will say anything like it.
It just goes to show, how, in your country as well as ours, how much the mainstream media and the politicians are out of touch with the people. We only have a minute here, but we talked about a story in Vocative about British groups. Gun rights, gun activists are now calling for the right to bear arms. When I saw, and I know this was in France, but when I saw that priest be murdered, I'm like, why is there no one in that congregation who's armed? The same thing when I saw the latest terror attack in England where they're throwing glasses at the attacker from pubs trying to get them to stop. Why is no one armed? And do you see a call for that now?
No, I don't think that's going to catch on. There are too many downsides we'd have in imposing or introducing gun ownership at this stage. In fact, the authorities have been pretty good. They got to London Bridge in a matter of minutes. But yeah, I mean, there are advantages you have, and there are some disadvantages that you have. Advantages we have, disadvantages that we have. But as I say, it's all basically part of the same picture. And the real thing we're not responding to is not guns, you know, shooting attackers. The real thing we're not responding to is that whereas we all know what to do when some crazy right wing, crazy maniac, white supremacist, KKK. Everyone knows what to do with that when somebody goes off and shoots people like that. When an Islamist does something, we not only don't want to know why they did it, we don't not only not look at where they did it or who they knew or what mosque they went to, we deliberately avoid asking any of the questions. In other words, societally, we are just not set up for the problem that is now rushing at us.
There's a famous American conservative book, or essay, Suicide of the West, and was it talking
James
about
the
communist menace at the time. You would think after all these terrorist attacks, and the leaders in Europe have got to be briefed in Germany and France and England on the threat they face daily, and they see it obviously. Why, isn't there a time where the public safety takes precedence over political correctness and they take the steps necessary to protect the populace? The failure of leadership is extraordinary here.
It's extraordinary and it's excruciating to watch, I have to say. I mean, I've spoken to many politicians across Europe whilst writing this book. And they basically, some of the German politicians in particular, I just decided they were suicidal. And I left a meeting with one. I said to a friend I was with, I said, look, I mean, at the end, if you want to kill yourself, then you can. But I see no reason why you should take your entire continent with you.
Well, Douglas Murray, thank you so much for joining us. It has been a pleasure. This half hour flew. It went by. The book is The Strange Death of Europe, Immigration, Identity, and Islam. Thank you so much for joining us.
Such a pleasure.
It is 8:25. It's time for W.